racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And let's go to our first racetrack of the afternoon, Noarlunga Raceway, where Kylie Mavis joins us. The Formula 4 Championship of 2000 has been won and won, and Kylie, an interesting one at that.
Hi Craig, yeah, it's been another great weekend of Formula Ford racing, and this time we're over in Manila for the first time in years, I believe. So it was a wrap up of the season, and we have a winner. The winner is a 22-year-old Luke Yildon, so it was his first year in the championship, and he's taken it out, so congratulations Luke.
Yeah, pretty impressive performance by the youngster coming back on a real hot charge.
Yeah, he was. He's only won the championship by 1 point. He took it out with 171 points, and 17-year-old Rick Kelly was on 170. So it's just been amazing.
And for Leanne Ferrier, who was certainly the one to chase right throughout the series, and I don't think Garth Fender would like that too much, but she was certainly the one out in front of the point.
Yeah, Leanne and Stuart McColl were both in the championship contention going into this weekend, but unfortunately they both got mixed up in an incident in the first race where they were trying to take the same corner with one other driver who wasn't in the contention, and McColl and Ferrier lost out, so thus spinning off, and McColl actually had a broken car after that incident, had to basically lead back into the pits, and Ferrier kept going, but she only finished 10th, and again in the second race McColl had an engine failure before the race even begun, so he didn't even get on the grid. So he didn't score any points this weekend, which was unfortunate for Stuart, but Leanne managed to climb up to 5th place in the second race, but she finished 3rd in the championship, which is great for her, which means she's the highest placed female in a circuit race championship, so which is a great result for her.
In Australia?
In Australia, that's correct.
Alright then. Now Kylie, not the last race of the Formula Fords this year though, with two more visits for non-point scoring rounds.
We do. It's the end of the championship, but Formula Fords will be out on track at Indy and also Bathurst, so I'm really looking forward to both of those because I believe both of them are supposed to be spectacular, so especially Bathurst, because what you see on television is not exactly what it is, so I think it'll be really, really interesting, and to see some of the up-and-coming talent coming out and having a go at Formula Ford in those two events.
All right, now, of course, right throughout the year, the trackside program has shown all the Formula Ford events, and when will they be showing this, the final two races in the championship?
They show it the following weekend after the rounds already happened, so it won't be this weekend because that's obviously live. It's a pre-record, so it'll be aired next weekend.
All right then. Well, Kylie, a great year of Formula Ford racing, and Luke Yildon's coming up with a well-deserved championship.
He has, and, you know, just watch the papers because I believe there's some news on what Luke's going to be doing for the rest of the year as an endurance racer. So watch the papers because, I mean, Formula Ford's will start out, but it's, you know, to V8 to Formula 1 is where they go. He's one of the ones I think that's got a break. So congratulations, Luke, and watch out for the news.
All right, you can't just give us a hint?
No, you have to read the papers.
All right, then. Well, Motorsport News is only out on Thursday, so we can wait till then. Thanks very much for all your help this season, Kylie
Mavis. No worries. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Kylie Mavis joining us there from Malala, and we hope very soon, if I can organise myself without making too much noise, to go to Dave Langfield, of course, our good friend over there in South Australia. But in the meantime, coming up on the show, we have Formula One, kart, NASCAR, just a heap of European information and a whole bunch more. So hopefully we'll be able to get through all that in the 1 hour that is allotted to us, which seems to be far too early in the year. Colin Ford and Peter Norton joining me on the other side of the panel, and it seems to have just come up on us so quickly, 6 o'clock tonight.
That's right, with the introduction of daylight savings here in Australia ready for the Olympics, things have well and truly thrown us our time. Situation is completely and utterly, as they say, we've gone wacko. But it's sort of definitely has thrown us out this daylight savings, hasn't it?
Yes, it's totally weird that it's still light outside and I just can't get used to that yet.
And it's only the end of August.
That's right. What will be like tomorrow morning getting up for work and it's going to be pitch black?
Well, some of us do have to get up that early. We've not got cushy, comfortable desk jobs like others. But one man who enjoys the out there in the open air is, of course, Dave Langfield, and I hope you can still hear us there on the line from Mallala Raceway, where the V8 lights have been the headliner at the South Australian circuit.
Can you hear us, Dave?
Might have to try that link again. So okay. Plenty of other news going on. Of course, Spa-Francorchamps is the venue tonight for the Formula One, and we will have a full report from the BBC's Jonathan Ledyard coming up a bit later on the show, and also we hear from David Coulthard and Jensen Button.
Yep. Just in terms of some news from the week, talking about Spa-Francorchamps, the news is this week that Prost Grand Prix team will be making their announcement after the Spa-Francorchamps race, the Belgian Grand Prix, about the engine deal that they have in place for 2001. Of course, the hot rumour that has been doing the rounds is that they have signed an engine deal with Ferrari for 2001, which was brokered by Formula One boss Bernie Eccleston. So we can still hear cars going around at Mallard, isn't that?
And David Langfield joins us on the line now. And David, you've been enjoying a great day of V8 light racing.
Yeah, it's been a great weekend actually here for otherwise we've had some beautiful sunshine today for the final round of the Konica V8 Light Series, which hopefully you should all know by now is has been taken out by Dean Canto in the EL Falcon. Besnard actually has won the overall won the day with two heat victories, and it was a bit of an instant packed event there with. Couple of spins happening during the event. How much have you guys got there for results?
Well, basically, what we've got is that in race one, it was David Besnard was the winner from Dean Canto, with then Matthew White from Ryan McLeod, then Wayne Wakefield finishing in fifth. And in race two, we had Dean Canto being the winner from Matthew White, David Besnard, Craig Harris, Wayne Wakefield. So that's our places for today. The other racing that was there today, of course, was the final round of the Formula Holdens. And I think from what I hear there that Christian Murchison was the winner in the race there.
Yeah, Christian Murchison had a great start. Both he and Matthew Halliday blitzed Simon Wills, who actually took pole position. They actually blitzed past him at the start to lead into the first turn. By the late in the race, I think I'm pretty sure Wills actually had realised he'd won the championship by that stage. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but he seemed to realise he had a points advantage there that he didn't need to try to fight up to those guys in fact.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, if he stayed where he was in third place, he still had the points to take out the championship, whereas Murchison basically closed the gap. I think they were probably putting him second in the championship.
Yeah, Murchison put up a great fight, obviously, and so that move off the start line was what got him the advantage. But Wills really did fight for it, and as I say, towards the end of that first race, he was just playing it safe, which is the common sense thing to do, and just assure himself the championship.
Right. Yeah, actually, we know from the results here today that Dale Breed, who's from here in Canberra, he finished fourth. That's probably one of his best finishes from this year.
Yeah, I believe I haven't actually got the results in front of me at the moment, but I believe he had a result in the second race. Won the second race. Second race was red flagged with car 24 Ian Peters actually had a roll in turn 5, rolled over and apparently actually broke the rollover hoop off the car. Now fortunately he is reported to be okay and actually exited the car. He was upside down in the car for quite some time, but it caused a red flag for the race to be shortened, stopped early. But he did actually get out under his own steam and has quite a bit of bruising and soreness around the neck area apparently, and he's going to hospital for observation, but he was asking for his wife to be advised, so he is actually speaking, so hopefully he'll be okay there.
Mm. And so you had no real dramas like they had at Oran Park?
No, well actually we had a new grid procedure, obviously being Chief Grid Marshal that affected me, whereby we completely changed the procedure for the starting. Where all of us have got yellow flags now, and there's actually about 7 of us out there instead of the usual 2 that do the final start of the race, Chris Edwards, the series administrator here, advised me was trialled at the last round quarter with the V8 supercars, so we're the first lights round to do it there, and it does actually work well. So in the event that a car agreed. I don't know how much attention drivers actually pay to what's going on the side of the track where the flag marshals are when you're trying to whip a start grid, but it's a step in the right direction to get, the safety aspect. So, well, whether Larkin could have avoided that, given the new system or not, I don't know, but obviously it all goes towards making the sport a safer place for everyone.
Yeah, of course, in terms of other news over there in Adelaide, the next major event that's coming up in due course is the Classic Adelaide Rally, and I believe you've got a few bits and pieces you can tell us about that.
Sorry, with the Rally, it's been confirmed that, actually I believe it's been run, I think the last weekend of October there, this year, it's been pushed forward a month. Now that doesn't actually have anything to do with the Olympics, like everything else being pushed forward a month, but it will be held I think a month earlier. Jack Brabham has been confirmed as coming back again in the car that he actually had an accident on the fourth day last year and went off the road and had the accident with in the Aston Martin. The car's been repaired and he's been allowed to drive it again. And my reports are that basically the same points of the rally every year. Actually preparing a sign that's going to say, Sir Jack, you have to write this time instead of smacking the tree like last year. So a bit of humour there amongst the officials. But also, we've got a 99% apparently confirmed that Wyn Percy will be coming back because he drove, I think, a proper replica last year and had an absolute fall. He had a bit of mechanical problems, but he's destined to come back again if they can make it all work. So, well, so we've got a few rumours in the pipeline of some other drivers there that sound, famous drivers that make. Obviously, as those come to light, we'll let you know.
Fine. And of course, then at the end of the year down in Adelaide, you'll be busy once again for the race of 1,000 years.
That's right. The Le Mans Sports Car. We believe we're having the Trans Ams from America as a sport race. John Pennell's obviously another one of his babies. They'll be supplemented apparently by some of the New Zealand cars, which Paul Morris would have driven in a couple of years ago, I think. He went over there and had a look at. So that field will be, filled out with some of the local sports vans that run here as a support and a co-class to the super truck racing. So that should be good. The other thing we've got, so you guys probably may not know this, historic Le Mans truck, I think is called Sebring Racing in America. So we'll see some sort of 50s and 60s sports cars. Some of those actually compete here in the Classic Adelaide Rally in the the Dennis class there for that. And also an as yet unnamed celebrity class, which I don't know what cars will be driving there, but we'll have some celebrities obviously there and the usual on and off track events, flyovers and things like that. I'm pretty sure an American going to get a US Navy carrier somewhere down there with a few F-14s and the like to go and do some flyovers.
That's right. I'm sure that
he's got to do anything else. So.
Yeah, I'm sure that Don Panos will make some arrangements for the US Navy, and I'm sure that US Navy probably likes having a port visit around somewhere around Adelaide at New Year's, so that'll probably mean there'll be some carriers and F-14s and those sort of things flying around the circuit as always.
Exactly.
Now, the next big major race you'll have down in down at Malala will be the Super Tourers in November, because they just had their latest round, which was to be held at Winton, cancelled. So a bit of a gap between when they had their last round at Oran Park and when you'll next see them at Malala.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's been sort of a bit iffy. There's been some conjecture as to whether that's actually, the organisers here have been saying, oh, are we going to have it or aren't we going to have it? Obviously, we all hope it is going to go ahead. Super touring is a lot of fun. It's good stuff. Paul Morris obviously will be well and truly back up to fitness then, and with a bit of luck, we might see some, potentially maybe some overseas drivers who have finished their own season. Their overseas events and can come down here for some of the last rounds of the championship.
Now, Dave, this race was a have a V8 lights race because you're not going to have a V8 supercar race.
Yeah.
Did the crowd come out for the lights, or do you think that the rejigging they're going to have to do is going to have to be fairly serious to be able to help tracks like Malala who are losing big name races?
Yeah, Malala, same as like Lakeside, I think I watched the telecast during the week to get myself up to speed with good lights again. Malala is doing it tough at the moment. There's not a lot of people here. The class, it's fantastic racing, I must say. The guys have just put on a really, really good show, but it's a little tough. We didn't really have that many people here. I don't know what the official crowd figures were. It was a decent sized crowd, but nowhere near what you get for V8. I don't know. It's, the promotion was there. I was just spent the weekend up in sort of, you know, the country areas, winery that 2 hours of Adelaide. And there was plenty of promotion for it. All the shops around there. A lot of country people like this sort of stuff. And there was plenty of promotional posters and stuff that were put out there by famous Glenn, who's one of our down here for Malala, the checkered flag marshal from Adelaide Grand Prix from years back. So he actually throw that liberal in this place. So there's plenty of promotional stuff, and the television has been promoted pretty well here. There's been a lot of stuff. They actually put adverts on yesterday during the AFL football. So yeah, that should have got a reasonably sized audience there, viewing audience, so to say. Even the weather put on, Malala usually puts on a bit of a bad weather, as I'm always harping on about. Great weather today, so there's no real excuses for it. I think the crowd really should get behind this, because it would be a lot of fun.
Okay, Dave, thanks very much for your report from Malala today, and no doubt we'll be back in contact in the future as things develop for the Classic of Adelaide Rally and the Race of 1,000 Years.
Not a problem, Colin. You're breaking up there. I'm having a bit of trouble hearing you, but thanks to everyone, and we'll see you next time.
No worries. Thank you.
Yes, Dave Langfield joining us there. Now, a lot of racing going on in the United States, and we're getting ready to a pretty big time for drag racing. The US Nationals is next weekend, and I'm looking at you because, Peter Norton, because you are our man in the USA, and on top of that, today's race in Bristol, which was tonight's race in Bristol if you're in America, was quite exciting, and you've got a NASCAR report on, of course, the Irish Hills race at Michigan.
Okay, yes.
Set in the lovely Irish Hills.
Yes, and I hate it when you look at me and talk about drag racing. You know that even though I spent the time in North America, I don't know anything about the drag racing over there.
Well, luckily, I can just read. And in the lead-up to the... don't laugh too hard, Colin. In the lead-up to the US Nationals...
Yeah, grateful there's no foreign names.
Yeah, don't worry. English ones are just as hard. In the lead-up to the US Nationals, Chelsea has dominated an eyebrow-raising... has dominated in practice and raising eyebrows right around the world. When you picture the two-time Top Fuel Winston champion, Gary Chelsea, you usually think of a friendly Fresno, California native with a smile on his face. But the 40-year-old has had a stunning career and has every reason to smile. He has... well, with his horsepower broker and team owner, Alan Johnson, torn up the NHRA stat sheets as quickly as they can run down a quarter mile. And lining him up against any name in the world has seen the Team Winston Dragster undisputedly out the front. He is planning to stay there at the US Nationals, and in qualifying has set some marvellous times. I think a 4:36 in practice on Tuesday, which was backed up with even quicker times at the Thursday practice sessions at IRP. In the IHRA, of course, the International Hot Rod Association, Peter, they had the event, the Mopar World Nationals, and it was Clay Milliken in Top Fuel who took out that. Steve Stoder in the Screaming Eagle Nitro Harleys. Quayne Scott in the Mopar Pro Modified. Scott Wendy in the IHRA.com Funny Cars. And John Montecarlo in the Sunoco Pro Stock, who had the win there along with Mike Decker in the Pro Outlaws. They had success at the IHRA Mopar Nationals. Of course, the next race in the series is the Armelli Oil. Is it Armelli Oil? You're in Canada. How was it? Northern Nationals at Epping, NH's New Hampshire in September 9 and 11. So in the finals, Milliken ran a 4.808 seconds at 301.54 to defeat Jim Head. Nitro Harley, it was Studer over McClure in Funny Car when he defeated Von Smith in the Pontiac Firebird. That was an interesting run because it was a 5.899 over a 5.991. So just got the whole shot and held it there. Quayne Scott with a 6.609 in Pro Modified, beat off Mitch Scott in another of the Corvettes, and Montecarlo in the Chevrolet Monte Carlo, he defeated Wally Stoop in another Monte Carlo for the Pro Stock title. So drag racing, I've tried to get it a little bit earlier in the show, and we will look forward to next weekend when the US Nationals will have the elimination rundowns for you. on how they're lining up in the top 16 for all the NHRA action. Of course, over in America, the NASCARs ran last night, as I said, and I might just go back to Friday night's racing at of course, the 5/8 of a mile. They reckon it's the greatest track to watch a NASCAR race at, and of course, Bristol, Tennessee certainly has the most action.
Yes, being such a small track and so many cars squeezed onto that little track, it guarantees a lot of action. So there's really not enough room there to pass anyone, but there is plenty anyway.
Well, it was Friday night, the Bristol 250, and the rookie, Kevin Harvick, survived the two-lap shootout to cap a dominating performance in the Food City 250. Harvick started on the pole and led 241 of the 250 laps around the Bristol Motor Speedway. He was only out of command when he gave up track position for a pit stop, but he passed Kyle Petty 9 laps later to retake the lead. Now, NASCAR then decided to red flag the race for just over 7 minutes so the track could be cleaned up in time to finish the race under green. And I was wondering, because they put all the clay down to run the World of Outlaws there, if they had much problem with a green racetrack, because they would have had to hire for a gurney all the clay out of the asphalt.
Yes, you can imagine that changing the surface like that would cause all sorts of problems. So, yeah, that could lead to some of the incidents.
Anyway, Jason Keller, who was running second at the time of the red flag, he left his car idling during the stoppage. When it came time to go again, he stalled out, and that was the end of him. Teammate Jeff Green tried to give Keller a push to get the car started, but Keller couldn't keep the engine on. And so the trip down pit road, NASCAR allowed him to move back into second place before the restart. But it made little difference because Harvick was quick off the restart and wasted no time, pulling away from Keller and Green. Keller finished second, Green was third, Harvick beat Keller to the finish line by 2 car lengths. And, well, as I said earlier, we saw a great result there to Rusty Wallace, who had back-to-back wins. And we talked off-air, Peter Norton, about how, a very hard-charging Rusty Wallace has been late in this season.
Yes, it was only earlier this year that he finally took his 50th victory in NASCAR, and that came after what seemed like years since he had his previous victory. So it's really good to see the old Rusty back up there on top again. As always, Craig's off doing something else as usual. But yeah, it's, the situation of a lot of those circuits is that, of course, if they're doing these sort of major works, then it always makes things tricky for the drivers and they come back to them and makes it a bit interesting. Yes, that's right. And what I love about some of these smaller NASCAR tracks is that the track is small, but the grandstands are absolutely huge. It sort of goes up into the sky, and they squeeze in there, 100,000-odd people, all crowded around such a tiny little track. It's
and
really quite amazing.
In 2002, they're adding another couple of 100,000 seats.
Yeah, why not? They'll fill them. There's no problems there. Plenty of crowds will get in there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too, that if you look at the size of those crowds, in fact, that the bleachers are always filled to the overflowing, but I reckon the traffic jams must be fun getting out afterwards.
Been there, done that. I can vouch for the traffic jams. 2-3 hours just to get out onto a freeway that's moving again. That's about standard. That's normal.
I suppose the name of the game would be that you take your packed meals to have while everybody else gets out of the way, then go.
Well, that's right. The Americans really go in for the tailgate parties. And in fact, there's a lot of new models now being put out. There's Pontiac Aztec. People who watch Survivor might have noted that was one of the prizes for the winner there. It is the ugliest car I've ever seen. And they were making such a fuss about it at the Detroit Auto Show back in January about how it was perfectly set up for a tailgate party. It had the stereo controls and everything right at the back of the car, so as you've sat in the tailgate, you can adjust the stereo and reach into your cooler and pull out a can of Bud. It really is a different sort of lifestyle there. And if you're going to be stuck in the car park for 3 or 4 hours, well, you might as well kick back and enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm sure that if they had something similar in Australia, that you could guarantee that there would be police random breath tests sitting just outside the racetrack exit area. I think the number of times I've been out of various racetracks where they have the big meetings, and sure enough, they have the random breath testing, the vehicle checks and the speed trap all on the exit road from the circuit. So I think the tailgate party would not probably take off so well in Australia given our random breath testing rules.
Well, that's right. The Americans have an advantage there because their beer is so weak and the alcohol content means you have to drink 2 or 3 cases before you're in trouble.
Well, there you go. It just goes to show that we do have something out of the Americans. We at least have full-strength beer. So, yeah, it's always good fun. Actually, if we'll jump to the other side of the pond, to the British Touring Car Championship, and over there, the promoters for the British Touring Car Championship in 2001 are looking to promote the British Touring Car Championship with a youth feel and showbiz drivers. What they've pledged to do is spend £1 million on marketing next season to give a facelift to the whole thing, to try and get some new people in. And part of it will be the fact that they'll actually be running their own two-car team representing a manufacturer not otherwise involved in the championship. And that team will be aimed at nurturing talented young British drivers under the age of 21. So that's good for that. They're also looking at trying to bring in a number of guest drivers each round from the world of showbiz. And as we know, probably a few people are aware that people like Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits have fun by being racing car drivers in this spare time. So they're going to try and get those sort of people along as guest drivers. And they've also talked to people like Nigel Mansell about making another guest appearance. Also, the reigning British Touring Car champion, Lawrence Aiello, who's currently running in the new German DTM, he's also looking at the fact that if things don't improve, because he's currently running one of the Abt-run Audi TTs, if they don't get better by the end of the season, he says he's going back to England. He's had enough. So the thing there is that potentially he could return to Peugeot, who he ran in the German Championship some years ago and the French Championship, who are coming back into the British Touring Car Championship. So if that's possible, that would be interesting to see where he goes there. We did preview the DTM race last weekend, which is at Nürburgring, and the race results there were that Bernd Schneider took a lights to flag victories in both races at the Nürburgring, and apparently Mercedes Motorsport boss Norbert Haug was there, and apparently he was doing a rousing Rolling Stones medley, which included and getting no satisfaction. Apparently after those two wins he was in a different frame of mind. So yeah, it basically was Mercedes-Benz taking out the top three, four positions in both races. So Mercedes-Benz benefited the Nürburgring.
And what an interesting position that's in at the moment, with, well, Mika Häkkinen taking another pole position and Jenson Button really throwing a cat amongst the pigeons, starting out of box number three.
Well, that's right, and really what it's done, it's made a situation that is going to throw things well and truly open at the start as always. But in this case, we've got Jarno Trulli sitting right alongside Mika Häkkinen, and that, I think, is going to be an interesting drag into the first corner there at Spa-Francorchamps. The real interest will be on that second row of the grid, where we've got Michael Schumacher alongside Jenson Button. I wonder who's going to sort of say, well, here's my moment of glory, or this could be a complete and utter mess.
Yeah, it could be indeed. But Jonathan Ledyard is at Spa-Francorchamps. Thanks very much to the BBC World Service. Here's his report.
It's not often that Michael Schumacher is made to look ordinary at his favourite circuit in the Ardennes Forest, but Mika Häkkinen managed it with one lap of such sparkling brilliance that the rest could have reached for the sun cream. The Finn's flying charge was more than 3/4 of a second better than Jarno Trulli's Jordan in second, and at this late stage of the season, that is a massive advantage. Häkkinen's main rivals, Michael Schumacher and David Coulthard, were left trailing by almost a second, and from rows 2 and 3 respectively, both have a mountain to climb every bit as daunting as Spa's Eau Rouge corner. That said, Jenson Button's third place shouldn't be obscured. A week after Williams confirmed they were loaning him to Benetton for the next 2 years. It was a career-best qualifying for Button, 3 places better than his teammate Ralf Schumacher. But with Michael Schumacher and Coulthard just behind him for the race, Button's work has only just begun.
And in fact, Jonathan Ledyard had an opportunity to catch up with Jenson Button soon after that hot lap.
How good was that? And if I can tell you that, it's absolutely amazing. When I came round and the team told me I was P3, I shouted as loud as I could down there. Down my microphone. I think they're all deaf now. But no, it's a great feeling. Absolutely amazing. But you always want to do better. I'm third on the grid and it's amazing for me, I know, but I wanted to be second or first. It is a strange feeling, but I'm very happy.
But to do it on this circuit, which is one of the most, probably the most challenging circuit you come across in a season,
it's great. Absolutely amazing. I think I don't think it could have come at a better time either, really.
Why'd you say that?
I just don't think it could have in my career. I think it's a good time in my career, and I'm very happy about it. A really special corner. I didn't quite do it flat, but I'm sure I'll try that next year.
Why did it happen here and now, do you think? What was it? What was just so good for that?
What was so good? The car worked very well, obviously. BMW have done a good job on the engine, and also my experience. Just keep getting more experience with the car, and I know this circuit. That's what difference it makes for me now to know a circuit.
And you want to win tomorrow, don't you?
Of course I do, yeah. It's going to be tough, I think. Very, very tough, but looking for a good result.
David Coulthard's an interesting man. He was dumped by Williams. His button seems to have been done, Colin. And, well, now he's in a real contender's position for the World Championship.
And that's true enough. And, of course, the thing is, with the case of Jenson Button, he, of course, is on loan to Benetton for 2 years, supposedly to get experience. And at that time when Jenson Button would become available from Benetton again, Ralf Schumacher's contract would be up, Juan Pablo Montoya's contract would be up, there'd be all bets are off, and of course Frank Williams would probably do one of his usual things. But as always, David Coulthard is a man with quite a few interesting things to say.
Yes, and in the papers during the week, it was announced by Jackie Stewart that it would be really David Coulthard's year, and Jonathan Ledyard, thanks very much to the BBC, caught up with him as well.
I need results, you know, I know that, but it hasn't changed at this point of the season than any other point. And if I drive well and the cars fall my way, then the rest take care.
The fact is, you're still picking up points. That's the key, which for the last few years you haven't been. You've still got this reliability, for which we keep our fingers crossed, don't we?
If I can finish 6-5 races, I'm going to be in with the show, and that's what I've got to aim for.
Jackie Stewart, another Scot, was tipping you as the world champion. Is he wise to put his money where his mouth is?
I appreciate Jackie's support. It means a great deal. He's obviously someone I respect immensely, and I think he has a great deal of respect within the sport. You know, I've read what he's actually said, and it seems quite logical that if, you know, the races this year, when I've really been all together, I think I've been unbeatable. And if I can have those sort of performances in the next few races, then Michael and Mika don't pose a threat to me. But it's trying to be on the top of my form and hope that they am.
And how easy is it to do that? I mean, it's a constant battle, or because at one stage you were in the groove and had the beating of those two, now they seem to have come back.
Yeah, it's like at the beginning of the year, you know, everyone was saying Michael's won the championship, and that's all changed now. It's going to keep chopping and changing. It's a competitive series, closely fought battles, and a small little difference in performance can make a big difference in lap time, so it's going to be close, and I just hope that I'm in there fighting with them.
Colin, the Formula One, what an interesting position that's in at the moment with, well, Mika Häkkinen taking another pole position and Jenson Button really throwing a cat amongst the pigeons starting out of box number three.
Well, that's right. And
I just hope that I'm in there facing with him.
Joining us on the line is Phil Brennigan from Motorsport News. And Phil, another action-packed edition, the 186th edition. It seems so long ago when we started this radio show talking to Chris Nixon, and we were talking about edition numbers in the ones and twos.
Well, it seems that way. It was a long time ago, and yeah, life goes on. We're not quite in the league of autosport yet, having a 50th anniversary, but we're on our way, so we'll get there.
And with all the stuff that's going on in V8 supercars, and probably it's more interesting off the track at the moment, as silly season is right in full force, and it all sort of pivots around one man. And that is, of course, Craig Lowndes. Now, the mail that we've been getting is Stone Brothers, and I believe that's the mail you've been hearing as well.
Well, there's a couple of rumours around. Craig himself put out his regular communique to his fans and his press on Friday, and he and Natalie both said that he was keen on continuing his relationship with Holden. They didn't say anything about Holden Racing Team. Craig's maintained all the way through that he's 90% likely to stay where he is, but if I was Holden, I wouldn't want my lead driver, and all respect to Mark Scaife, I wouldn't want him walking around without a contract and all tuckly warmly cuddled away in cotton wool for 2001 and 2002. So, will he jump ship? We don't know, but it's a big question mark at the moment, like you said.
A lot of people don't realise that Craig is based on the Gold Coast now, making the move from Victoria.
Well, yeah, he's got a house up there in Brisbane, got a few acres. He's out there with a lawnmower most weekends when he's not racing, taking care of business up there, and a few people have sort of said that perhaps he'd be better suited to get a Queensland-based team, and of course there aren't that many Queensland-based Holden teams, so I don't know. I mean, it's our bread and butter. We talk about contract all the time. We're talking about Montoya as well, and we don't really know what's going to happen with Craig Lowndes or Juan Montoya, for that matter.
Well, interesting, on most of the internet sites that you read, the silly season in kart, it says that it's now all hanging on Andretti. And, of course, Andretti this week is, in the week's gone past, says he wants to drive at the Indy 500. And a major turnaround from the family that absolutely hated in the IRL.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to see what's going to happen there as well. Al Unser Jr., of course, is the big draw card in the Indy Racing League at the moment. Sources in America suggest to us that half of Al's retainer is taken care of by Tony George. Now, Michael's retainer next year is due to be a lot bigger than it is this year, something in the order of $6 million. Latest story suggests that he might go to a team with an Indy 500 leading. And when you talk Indy 500 in America, these days people talk about Ganassi, because they'll be the defending race champions if they do go back. And Michael must be thinking now that if he wants to win that race and he wants to stay in kart racing, Ganassi's the place to be.
Of course, also rumours talking about Andretti starting his own IRL team and having it in the contract that he is able to drive at the 500.
Well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it, if he does start his own team. I think if he starts his own team though, Craig, he might stay in kart, because don't forget, he and his father Mario have had a bit of a falling out with Carl Haas. They own three Toyota dealerships in Pennsylvania themselves, and Toyota actually fund the teams they run in the FedEx Champ Car Series. Something in the order of $30 million for Ganassi, and I'm told by a good source, Phil Morris in America, the PPI gets about $15 million. Now, Andretti's still a household brand name in the States, probably the only one in IndyCar racing at the moment. So maybe Toyota might have something to say about Andretti's future. Mm-hmm. But then again, we thought that about Montoya, and now it looks like those rumours are wrong.
Yes. Well, you talk about Ganassi there, and of course he's going with Dodge down south with his new NASCAR team.
Well, Felix Zebaides is still going to be involved, but Ganassi is the man with the golden touch. Zebaides hasn't been that impressive as far as producing winners in the Winston Cup is concerned. So now Ganassi, he will spearhead Dodge's program in 2001. And who's to say that Chip won't make those golden fingers do the work? And maybe he will become the man to beat in NASCAR racing as well. And don't forget, he also owns a couple of racetracks.
Yeah, he... quite an amazing man. Another amazing man is, of course, Don Panos. And we started with Craig Lowndes. And, of course, in Motorsport News, edition 186 that's on the newsstands now, you talk about him signing up for the Panos deal.
Well, yeah. Don Panos was over here in Australia. He was in Melbourne at the middle of December last year. And he was quite upfront even then, saying, hey, I want some Australian drivers in my cars. Blackowski came out of the box fairly early. Craig Lowndes now in the car. Understand the people at Holden, even though the motorsport department okayed the drive for Lowndes because he was going to be out of contract, aren't that happy. Don't forget, Panos is not a works Ford supported team. They are a Ford customer team. In other words, they use Ford engines and modify them themselves. And they'll be going to a non-Ford based engine next year. So I don't know what all the fuss is about, but Panos is a man who's very determined. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is A, seeing Craig drive that car, and B, seeing David Brabham drive the 2001 prototype panels.
Yeah, they are spectacular cars, and they look like real race cars too. That's if you like having your engine in the front of the car.
It's sort of like, it's a bit like a Lotus 7 on steroids, isn't it? Something Arnold Schwarzenegger would drive to a picnic on the weekend.
Or a very, very Batmobile-esque MGA.
Absolutely.
Kinder has done it at Knoxville, and of course that race meeting, well, fairly bad for our number one competitor in the world of outlaws in Brooke Tatnoff, who as you report out for quite a few weeks.
Yeah, unfortunately Brooke having a big accident some weeks ago, he expected to miss about 6 weeks of the world of outlaws season. Mark Kinder doing the job at in the world of outlaws feature for the year. We used to think Steve Kinder up there in the winner's circle. Well, let's not forget Mark, he's they're cousins, of course, identical cousins. Daniel Fine, that's a late 60s American sitcom, I think. But Mark Kinder's making a name for himself in World of Outlaws racing, and that's good to see.
But Mark does have Carl Kinder doing the wrenches, and of course Carl Kinder for many years was backing Steve, and it seems to make all the difference. And as anyone knows, it's not just the driver who is the race winners at most races, it is what you've got behind you.
Well, it's in the blood, isn't it?
Look, also we should have a quick chat. The final round of the V8 Lights is on at the moment, but one story that's going to be fairly prominent is the absolute debacle at Winton. I know that will be a major feature in the up-and-coming edition 187 of Motorsport News.
Well, it was a bit of a late-breaking story in the last issue that the race may have been cancelled. The VAC went through on Tuesday and cancelled the meeting because of problems the EPA said they had with their toilets that were caused by vandalism. Toker, of course, are not happy about it. Some of the competitors had already invested on non-refundable airfares and had lost the deposits they put down for accommodation. It's been a bit of a debacle. I've been involved in the sport for almost 20 years, and it's something I can't remember happening, and I don't think we've heard the last of this, because I can see some legals being done in the future.
Yeah. it does sort of make a mockery of a championship that is also struggling.
Well, the season's racing had been okay, not brilliant. The television coverage had been pretty good by Channel 7, and this was the last race before a three-month break that would have been enforced by the Olympic Games. So really, with some competitors like David Auger, for instance, having a new sponsor, that was the last thing they needed, and some of the teams already started their transporters on the road. Hey, thank God for CB radios on mobile phones, otherwise I would have ended up in the, would have found the circuit gates locked, but it is an awkward situation. I'm sure the BAC didn't really want to cancel the race meeting. It wasn't their first choice, of course. They've been in the business for more than 30 years, and we'll have to wait and see what happens on this one, and for once I'm glad I'm on the sidelines.
Doesn't it seem like Benetton got the better of the Williams deal with Jason Button starting out of three?
I don't know. I really think sometime in the future Sir Frank is going to look back at what he decided to do, if that's if he goes with Montoya, and think, what have I done? I mean, Jensen Button must be thinking to himself, Renault, that's an exemplary record in Formula One, as you know, and Jensen Button third on the grid at Spa. This is one of the first racetracks he's raced on in Formula One this year, where he's raced in the past, and that was, of course, in Formula 4 2 years ago. He's going to Monza next, where he's also raced, and of course after that Indianapolis, where no one's raced. So I think that's going to be a real telling point as far as the rest of the season is concerned, and into 2001 and 2002.
It is an interesting one too, because you also have things going on where someone like Jackie Stewart has come out and said this is really David Coulthard's year, and expect him to stand up in the last part of the season. Now on top of that you have like a very, very talented driver who was also let go by Williams.
Well, Williams has a great record of dismissing drivers, and I'm not sure I really understand the reasons behind them. Of course, all the cases are individual, but like I said before, Jensen Button, like if Montoya doesn't come out and beat Jensen Button next year, he's going to look like a deal. And it might be the battle for sixth or seventh, so I might not be fighting out Grand Prix wins. But I can't think of anyone who's made a bigger impression in his first year of Formula One than probably Michael Schumacher since then.
Yeah, that's right. Or maybe an Ayrton Senna.
Well, yeah, of course, he almost won these first seasons, didn't he? Hey, Jensen might win tonight, who knows?
I'm hoping so. And doesn't daylight saving this early in the year just screw your entire viewing habits up completely?
Yeah, that was my cranky son you could hear in that room before. Okay. He's not used to, he thinks it's tea time now, so I'm just about to put him dinner.
For the fans across the ditch, though, great news for Scotty Dixon getting that test with the PacWest team.
Yeah, Scott Duxton over there from New Zealand with PacWest doing a tremendous job. Everyone knows he's a good driver. He's impossibly young, of course. I don't think he's 20 yet, but PacWest, you would have to think, Craig, probably shopping for a couple of drivers, because Big Mo and Big Mo really haven't been doing the job in the last couple of years, and sure, they've got Mercedes-Benz engines, but basically this year, they've been kicking the butt by first-year Mercedes-Benz team in Monon Racing with Tony Kanaan and various other people, including Brian Herter. So I would expect to see some changes at PacWest. Of course, they've got Australian running their media now, Brett Crusher Murray, you know so well, so... we'll wait and see, but I think Dixon's the man in the hot seat, and I think also people are making these noises about Jason Bright and Giafone from the Lights, so could be some big changes coming up for the new drivers in the FedEx Championship Series.
And of course the race that Jason Bright will be doing is with PacWest, isn't it?
Good question. What a good question. We don't know. It could be with Carl Hogan racing with a Swift, with either a Ford or a Honda engine. It could be with Penske. It could be with PPI. Though I'm hearing noises of PPI sort of on the back foot at the moment. So we'll wait and see. Of course, it's a Honda-sponsored event, and you'd want to be in a Penske radar, wouldn't you, at the moment, the way they're going?
Yeah, that's the truth. And overnight, I don't have the latest results, but from our good friends at the European Motor Racing Team, it is, and of course it's not in front of me, but Mark Webber qualifying 7th for Spa, and of course that race has been run. I don't have any results.
Well, good old FIA, of course. If you ever want to find out anything about the Formula 3000 Championship,
exactly.
Good luck.
Yeah.
But Mark qualified 7th, had some balance problems with the car in qualifying and tyre problems in the race. Unfortunately, he ran into somebody else early on in the race, pitted tyres, came back through the field, didn't get a result, but he got the second fastest race lap, and Spa is one of the places where they really take notice of how fast people go, so you've got to say that Mark may have impressed the right people. He's had what you would describe as some impressive DNS this year, and I think that was an impressive no-point score finish for Mark. But he has got some bigger things in front of him, of course. In 2 weeks' time, he'll be at Estoril, toddling around the track, looking at it and getting ready to jump in a Benetton.
Yeah, it's exciting times for Mark Webber at the moment. And, in fact, exciting times for quite a few drivers overseas, with Marcus Ambrose doing so well. I think a ninth place in his second Formula 3000 race, and I think that was at Silverstone, but I'm probably...
In Formula 3, sorry. Yeah, Marcus is a real talent. Of course, he won the Motorsport Young Driver of the Year Award, Motorsport News Young Driver of the Year Award last year. Some people sort of said, oh, he's a little bit old, he's been around a few years, but it doesn't seem to matter. Once you get in Formula 3, he can really cut the mustard, and it's a particularly good year in British Formula 3 at the moment. There's good pedals out there like Bazonia and Schechter and those sorts of people. So if Marcus is running with those guys, that's a pretty impressive run.
Yeah, it is indeed. And one feature that everyone has jumped on the bandwagon in is Aaron Noonan's new series of Whatever Happened To. Of course, the Scotsman, Johnny Dumfries, the kickoff man on the hot seat. And, of course, this edition, no exception.
Well, yeah, and this edition, I don't know if we're going to have one, because we've got the we're going to have the Super Series, but that's gone. We've got the Australian Rally Championship, the World Rally Championship, World of Outlaws Karting. Left anything out? I don't know if we're going to have a Whatever Happened To. I was actually thinking of doing a Whatever Happened To Wayne Webster, the motoring journalist, but probably not a good idea. There's a whole list of names on one of our whiteboards at work, and we really would like to something we'd like to continue doing. I noticed that Autosport have also done a few in the UK, and we're not copying them. We did it completely independent of them, so there's some good drivers out there. Whatever happened to Claudio Langes? Whatever happened to Jose Legarza? All those people.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Rusty Wallace? 2 wins on the trot. He has really been kicking on in the NASCAR.
If he was a sprinter getting ready for the Olympic Games, I think they'd be asking for a sample. We're getting ready to say, well, you know, Rusty Wallace has had his time, but you can't. That's a great indication of what how competitive NASCAR racing is. Well, Sarah Walter was in the front row of the Brickyard 400, so Rusty Wallace is relatively young. So let's see what he can do next season. Of course, he loses the Valvoline deal. Miller.
Yeah, Valvoline going to the Dodge team, and I can't remember who picked up that one, but...
One of the teams. The massive teams over there. I'll leave that to Martin Clark.
Yeah. Phil Brannigan, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, as always. And, of course, Motorsport News out now on the shelves is, of course, talking about Craig's dilemma, the struggle that he has to find a contract where he can get some merchandising rights, which is probably what this thing is all about.
I don't think you're too far away from having an own goal there, to be fairly honest, because that's pretty close to it. I think that HRT, if you were a caller last week, you would have seen a sea of red. They make a lot of money out of merchandising, and I think if Lounsey goes anywhere, or even if he stays where he is, his contract will have a cut of merchandising for 2001 and 2.
All right. Phil Brannigan, it's a pleasure, and of course, Motorsport News on sale now.
Absolutely.
For Toyota, it was a welcome return to the front of the pack as Neil Bates goes into the final round of the Australian Rally Championship, level pegging. Neil Bates, congratulations. A very impressive run. It's all sort of turned around for you. 4 minutes ahead of Possum is just fantastic.
No, not 4 minutes.
4 seconds, though.
It was 17 seconds yesterday and then I think 3 seconds today, so it was very close. But
might as well be 4 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. It can be 1 second or 4 minutes, doesn't make any difference. But obviously, we're extremely happy. Like, if you have a look at the start of the year, we were behind in person. You know, people gave us very little chance of being able to, regain the extra speed and get back into the championship, but we've done that and we're exceptionally happy with that.
Mm. The car, have you had to do much work on it over the season?
We've done a lot of development over the year and a lot of testing and just to make sure everything comes in right and, you know, it's just little gains here and there and then it just comes down to me being confident with the car and, you know, it was just a pleasure to drive on the weekend.
It seems like these roads really do suit you. You do seem to love to go to Melbourne.
Yeah, I do. You know, people ask me before the event, but I've probably played it down, but I just absolutely love the roads here and they're roads that you can really attack and have a big go on them, and I really enjoy it. And I think that it's also, they're very fast roads and quite tricky, and I think pace notes play a big part in them.
Mm. Now, you head down to Tasmania in, I think, 4 weeks' time for the Tarmac, Tasmania?
No, it's the final round at the ARC, but it's on gravel, not on tarmac, and the Saxon Safari Rally ran out of Hobart, and that's the final round of the Australian Super Series.
Yes. Do you like the roads down there? Will they suit the Toyota?
Yeah, they should do. Like, you know, realistically, they're very similar to Melbourne in a lot of ways. Perhaps a little bit faster, but yeah, they should suit us reasonably well, I think.
And, of course, with that, the Manufacturers' Championship's still not over. That won't be over until after Rally Australia.
Yeah, I think we've got very little chance of the Manufacturers' Championship, though, because we've only got one vehicle in that, and, you know, Subaru and Mitsubishi have got a horde of cars out there, so but we're still flying the flag for Toyota in the Manufacturers' Championship, and I'm sure we'll end up near the top somewhere, but I don't think we'll actually win that one with only one car.
Yeah. Before Hobart, of course, you have a stint in Queensland when you jump back into that blue oval badge.
Yeah, I'm off to the Queensland 500 in a couple of weeks, which obviously I'm looking forward to, and it'll be a good precursor to Bathurst, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. I'm actually testing a Winton tomorrow, so I won't be able to celebrate too hard tonight.
Oh, that's Tuesday night. Look out.
Exactly, yeah.
Neil, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Congratulations. We're all looking forward to seeing how you go over the next few weeks, particularly up there at Queensland, and then, of course, more importantly, probably for Toyota, we'll see you down there in Hobart.
No problem at all.
Interesting week it was of adventure in the Northern Territory. Mike Porter joins us on the line. Bruce Garland's dominance was once again prevalent, and, Mike, he went on with a great victory.
He did indeed. It was a strange week for Bruce. Everyone expected him to dominate right from the start, but that wasn't the case. The first couple of days, he was in the top three, but Ross Nicastri dominated the first couple of days, and then he rolled his Nissan on day two, just out of day three, actually, just out of Curtin Springs, and that put him back in the pack, and then Terry Denham actually took over as the leader, and then Terry ran into some problems on day four, relinquished the lead to Bruce. Bruce took a sort of a 30-minute lead on day four and basically drove to everyone else's speed after that. He had one or two incidents. He was caught in a cattle stampede on the Barclay Tablelands on Thursday, and he said it was like being caught, you know, like in an old Wild West movie.
It is an adventure which I'm sure that everyone, competitors and officials, have been enjoying. For one American, though, it was a pretty tough start, and Kevin Swantz really did come good at the end.
Well, he did. You must remember with Kevin, he's never done anything like this at all before. He didn't know really how to pace himself. On the first day, he went flat out, and I think he was fifth or sixth, and the second day, he really struggled, and he thought, well, hang on, I better just knock the speed back a little bit and concentrate on getting a finish here. And Kevin worked his way into it and gradually got better as the event went along, and today we finished off with a 3-kilometre sprint on Mendel Beach, and I guess enjoying the fact that it was a sprint event and he could sort of give it 100%. He went out and he beat Andrew Caldicott, the eventual winner, by 5 seconds, and won the last stage, and that was the only stage that Andrew Caldicott lost all week. It was a fabulous performance by Andrew. He was you know, cut above everybody. He led from start to finish. Of course, he had a real tragedy last year. He led the first 4 days and had a crash and broke his shoulder, had major shoulder reconstruction. So a terrific result for him and the whole KTM team. But also another really noteworthy performer was Casey McCoy, the American from the Mammoth area in the United States. He came over unheralded. He had a leased bike, a Honda XR400. I guess you'd have to say it was underpowered against the group of KTMs there. And he held second place from start to finish. It was a fabulous performance. And he had a bit of trouble yesterday. He hit a log and took a tumble and cut his lip up pretty badly. But, you know, fabulous performance from him. The Japanese riders, well, we started with 15, and their attrition rate was, you know, not very good. We lost six of them during the event, and today we had a very nasty accident with Asagi Fukuhara. He took a nasty tumble on the first jump, and he's gone. The total event was 4,067 kilometres, and he's gone 4,064 kilometres without hitting anybody, without crashing once, 3 kilometres on the beach. He lasted 100 metres, crashed and was taken to hospital and unfortunately gets credited with a DNF.
Yeah, disappointing, isn't it, when you get that close to home. But interesting also to see in this event that Caldecott, going into next year's race where it's a round of the World Championship, does really give him some extra confidence and once again shows the talent that is here.
Well, it does, but I guess when all the World Cup competitors come over, you know, the whole event is going to step up a level, both in terms of organisation, regulations, and obviously we're going to see all the works riders here with much better equipment. So for guys like Andrew Caldecott, hopefully, you know, they can get the necessary support, whether it's from KTM International or KTM Australia, to put him on a bike that's competitive enough for him to be able to show what he can do against these overseas guys. It's a bit like, I guess, in road racing. You know, we see Australians every year get wildcard entries into the Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix at Phillip Island, but if they're on the 250 GP bikes they race in Australia, they're really no match for the guys on the works bikes from overseas. So hopefully something can be done that, you know, guys like Andrew and one or two others can get themselves on a bike that's competitive enough to show what they can do.
Yeah, it is going to be an added advantage. Of course, Vodafone, major sponsors now going right through for the next few years, and of course, the Northern Territory government, once again, very pleased with the coverage it did get.
Well, that's for sure. You know, we, today at the final stage at Mendal Beach, we had about 2,500 people there. It was fabulous, great scenery overlooking the water. It was a beautiful day. Lots of public there, you know, lots of people, lots of spectators, all very interested. You know, all the cars and bikes roaring up and down the beach, doing some spectacular things. And they had actually an exhibition race once the safari finished. They had they got the top 12 motorcycle riders and ran them off in pairs of two to come out with a last start winner. So they put four or five jumps in. So it was really spectacular, and it was great for the public. And Kevin Schwantz has definitely been a real hit. Every place we've been to, we've had 7 overnight stops in various towns like Alice Springs, Curtin Springs, Wycliffe Wells, Top Springs, and Catherine. Everywhere he's gone, he's been an absolute hit with the locals. Very popular guy, Kevin. And he's, I think his right hand must be pretty sore from all the autographs he's signed. But, yeah, Kevin, from a public relations point of view, has just been fantastic. You know, he's basically jumped off the bike and done all the media interviews and shaken hands with everybody and, you know, done a fabulous job to basically sell motorcycling in a state that doesn't see any national championship road racing or anything. So he's done a great job.
Yeah, he has indeed, and we are looking forward now to 4 months' time when we'll see it as part of the World Championship, because as we said, it is going to give it a big lift. But Mike, we appreciate your help and covering this event for us here on Triple S, and I guess now it's a 3 month wait until we'll actually be talking to you again when the Super Tourers get fired up for the start of the summer season.
Well, I've got one or two other clients racing before then. Anthony West, of course, in the 250 Grand Prix at Phillip Island. So I keep an eye on him. He's a very determined young man from the Gold Coast going to be going into that race. And I know he's dead keen to try and get onto the podium.
Last weekend, the Kart FedEx Championship went to Elkhart Lake in Wisconsin, better known as Road America, where Paul Tracy had an amazing victory after coming from dead last position to win the Motorola 220. And he moved himself back into contention for the Kart title. The Canadian started 7th, but an electrical problem on the first lap caused his engine to cut and he dropped to the tail of the pack. This is how he recovered.
Unbelievable for the cool team. We had a stuck throttle sensor at the beginning. The engine shut off and lost its fire. They told me to flick some sensors and flick some reset buttons and the thing fired back up. Took off and, you know, was a quarter of a lap behind.
So after he reset the system, he charged back into contention. Mechanical problems may have accounted for many of the front runners, but this was no inherited victory. Forsyth's rising rookie star, Alex Tagliani, came from 3rd into the lead from the start line as he drove around the two front men, Dario Franchitti and Jules Deferrin. It's interesting that after dominating Mid-Ohio the previous weekend, the Marlboro Team Penske nightmare began almost immediately. A week ago, Helio Castroneves was celebrating victory. Now he was bouncing through the gravel after contact with Michael Andretti. At least Castroneves was able to rejoin a lap down after repairs. The unfortunate Jules Deferrin retired at the end of the first lap after suffering an immediate gearbox failure. Taglioni stormed away from the field at first, leading from Franchitti, Fernandez, Andretti and the amazing Montoya. The Colombian seemed to be in dire trouble during practice as Ganassi again troubled to make the Lola Toyota work on road courses. But he charged up from 12th, or up into 5th, on the very first lap, and he was soon past Andretti for 4th place too. While there was a big fight up front between Michael Andretti and Christian Fittipaldi and many others jockeying for position, Paul Tracy was carving his way through the rest of the field. Despite having been last by a country mile after the start, he was up to 16th position by lap number 12.
One of those days where I was just in the zone. Every lap was faster, 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 faster the whole day, and it stopped so good.
After the first pit stops, the field was becoming somewhat depleted. Patrick Carpentier had become the second significant retirement when he stopped on the course on lap 16, while 5 laps later, Michael Andretti came to retire from 6th with transmission problems. Dario Franchitti too was getting used to having bad days in the year 2000, and this was yet to be another one. He was struggling with an uncooperative third gear, which later led to his retirement with the gearbox failing altogether. Montoya was the first man to make his second pit stop, and he took service on lap 28 and rejoined in about 7th position. However, just 2 laps later, he would retire with yet another mechanical problem. The Colombian has now finished just 5 of this year's 14 races, and again he would go home without any reward, despite being clearly the fastest man on the track all afternoon. Fittipaldi then became the next potential winner to kiss his hopes of victory goodbye. He pitted as planned on lap 32, but immediately retired as his crew spotted an engine fire. With Moreno struggling with gearbox problems, it allowed Tracy into 3rd position behind Tagliani and Fernandez. The Canadian then surged past Fernandez with an excellent move into turn 1, nearly scraping the pit wall as he dived down the inside. That put him into 2nd, just 7.4 seconds behind countryman Tagliani with just 20 laps to go. Paul Tracy put on a charge, but in the end, he had no need to do so. He had reduced the gap to 3 seconds when Tagliani slowed to a crawl on the backstretch on lap 38, mechanical problems taking him out of the race that he truly deserved to win. With Montoya and Tagliani out, Paul Tracy was left to stroll to a relatively comfortable victory over Fernandez. The only glitch came when he had to park on the slowing down lap after running out of fuel. This is what Paul Tracy had to say.
Yeah, I didn't know we were that close on fuel. I had slowed down with a 10-second lead, but they said, just go, Ran out of fuel at turn 2.
That's right. They cut it this fine. So recapping the results, it was Paul Tracy from Adrian Fernandez.
Very happy. We were very consistent all weekend, and I made a few mistakes. I made one mistake. That's when I lost the position to Fittipaldi. I didn't select the right gear and went into first gear. Almost spun. And then after that, I lost a lot of time behind Sergio. I don't know why he was trying to fight with me. And I think that really cost us at least a good fight to Paul Tracy.
Kenny Brack was always in contention and chased Fernandez home for 3rd, despite losing time with a late header problem.
So it was a very good finish for us, considering we qualified 9th and everything. I was very happy with the podium here.
4th Roberto Moreno and 5th Jimmy Vassa.
And of course, Inside Motorsport, still a lot of motorsport happening right around the world, and we hope that you will join us next week. And of course, Piedmont, we do have a few more reports that you can catch on the internet at the Auto Channel.
Yes, that's right. We've got a nice...
So I'm absolutely hopeless at driving a computer.
Yes, we've got a nice package of NASCAR interviews and that from the big race at the Michigan 400 that Rusty Wallace won. Some quite interesting bits there, where it really was down to tyre strategy and a bit of luck with a late caution that, in some respects, handed it to Rusty. When all the other cars had gambled on only 2 tyres, Rusty had the 4 and drove to a reasonably comfortable victory in the end.
It was funny because in June, it was the fact that I think it was his teammate, Jeremy Mayfield, took 2 tyres and won.
Yes, that's right. It's just a bit of a lottery at times with the number of tyres and whether there's a caution or not.
Colin Ford, your prediction. Jensen Button taking out Shoemaker in the first corner, thereby leaving it for who?
I'd say at this stage, Mika Häkkinen from David Coulthard. Truly, I reckon Shoemaker might run up the back of him, because I'm sure he's probably used to the fact of sitting behind somebody and waiting for them to go, and of course that'll sort of throw him out, the fact that he's at the front. So that could be the fun and games there.
Paul Morris style.
Yeah.
Alright then. And of course, coming up next week we'll have all the results from Spa-Francorchamps, and go a little bit more in depth, I think, on what's going on with the V8 Lights, because that is probably going to be the biggest change in the face of Australian motorsport, is what they're going to do with that series.
Mm. I think that's one of those things too, that, you know, given the fact that they've been running it as a feeder group to the full Shell V8 series, and I think probably one of the things we'll probably have to look at too is that one of the interesting little bits and pieces floating around in the last week or so is about the fact that the Shell contract as the main sponsors for the Shell V8 series is up for renewal. And I can imagine the types of money that Avesco might be asking for the naming rights for the championship. And I'm just wondering whether in the current situation Shell might decide to change their mind and not be the title sponsor after all these years. So that's going to be interesting. But certainly the V8 Light series, it was planned as a feeder group, and it has basically gone not the way that it planned. They haven't had the crowds they wanted, and who knows where we'll go from there.
Well, that sounds like NASCAR to me, and last weekend the NASCAR Winston Cup Championship travelled to Michigan Speedway, where Rusty Wallace used four tyres and a little bit of luck with a late caution to win the Pepsi 400. Rusty say he was not without drama, however, when on lap 120 he came together with Ricky Rudd.
Yeah, it's just those things like that happen. I mean, I've been in those positions before where you get down the bottom going in turn one trying to pass somebody, and you get too close, you lose your air. And I was on outside of Ricky and probably should have backed off a little bit because he had a lot faster car at that point, and I'll take the blame for that one. But I'm just glad to get this Miller Lite Ford Taurus in victory lane right now. We had a great time today, and it was a lot of fun.
Ricky Rudd was competitive all day long, and perhaps a little unlucky not to win the race. Here he explains how tyre strategy led to the one that got away.
You know, kind of the story of our season this year, we've been really good at a lot of times, and just circumstances just haven't played in our favor. You know, I think we could have won the race for sure if caution not come out. And like I say, Rusty was sitting in perfect shape, had four tyres, the rest of us had two tyres, and he was by far the class of the field at the end on those tyres. But, you know, what can you do? That's just race.
So, was it just tyres, or did Rusty Wallace have a better car on the day?
Oh, no. He would jump out there and run for good for about 15 laps on fresh tires, and then he'd fade, and we'd pass him and just leave him. What worked in his favor, he was able to get four tires. He came in, he faded so far back, the stop before that, he only got two. So on that green flag, he came in and got four. Caution came out three laps later, he's sitting there on four tires, the rest of us sitting on two tires. So generally four will outrun two any time.
Bobby Labonte maintained and extended his lead in the championship with third place. He was never really a threat for the lead after a tough day of chasing the car set up.
Yeah, it was really good all day. You know, I just I couldn't really get comfortable on the surface today. Just didn't seem like I could get a very good feel, and didn't know what I wanted, and had a few things that were the same from last race and a few things different. So it's close, good run for us. So we finished third, and that's getting on the top five, and happy about that.
Another driver chasing set up all day long was last year's champion and currently second in this year's title chase, and that's Dale Jarrett.
Made a lot of changes, you know, that's the thing. We knew we came here to try to win the race, and we felt like in the first 80 laps that we didn't have a car that would win, so we needed to do something drastically different, and we did. We made quite a few changes. Got the car good, but got back tight again at the end, and that gave me some chance.
Dale Jarrett has won races in the past with tyre strategy, and again he had to roll the dice and take his chances on his choice of tyres.
Yeah, we did, and you know, we made a good call there with about 75 to go. We got four then, knowing that we went green flag from there on, that we could get two, and that would we'd have good fresh left sides, or not as many laps as the other guys. But caution came out, worked in Rusty's favor. They did the right thing, and still we had a good day. Unfortunately, we lost some more points.
The lead-up to the race had been overshadowed all week by the feud a week earlier between Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart at Watson's Glen. In that race, Stewart forced Gordon into the wall while Gordon was trying to pass on an S-curve. Gordon vowed a payback during a shouting match later in the garage area. And for the second straight week, the outcome of the race was almost upstaged by another incident between Gordon and Stewart. The brass Stewart, as he did a week earlier at Watkins Glen, took Gordon into the wall, causing serious damage. That time the two almost got into a fist fight, but this time there wasn't such bad blood. Stewart was running second at the time to Wallace when his car got loose and touched pole sitter Dale Earnhardt Jr. on lap 37. Earnhardt Jr. drove on, but Stewart's Pontiac began to swerve badly. The car got sideways between the first and second turn and spun into Gordon, who was trying to get past the trouble up on the high side. This is how Tony Stewart explained the incident.
I just lost it down there. I mean,
just racing hard out there. It was my fault. I just got down in there, and I don't know why I got loose. I hadn't been loose down there all day. Just for some reason got loose that one lap down there. Crashed a bunch of people. I didn't mean to crash. My fault, I lost it.
And so it was Rusty Wallace who beat Ricky Rudd by 2.97 seconds and averaging 132.586 miles per hour in a race that took just a touch over 3 hours to complete. Bobby Labonte was third, Dale Jarrett was fourth, and Johnny Benson finished fifth. This weekend, the NASCAR Championship moves on to Bristol, a nice little track where Rusty Wallace has won two out of the last three races. And he starts from pole position, so watch out for Rusty in this one again.
Well, a prophetic prediction there from you, in its fact that Rusty went on to do it. Two from two there, Peter Norton, and a pretty impressive run all when it's all said and done.
Yes, that's right. And after a couple of victories there for Rusty, you think, well, is he a chance for the championship this year? But probably not. It really does require that week-in, week-out, regular top-five finish, which is Dale Jarrett and Bobby Labonte this year, same as last year.
One thing you touched on in that report was a real Donnybrook that was being battling, and it was something NASCAR needed, because not really since Carl Yarbrough and Bobby Allison have we seen two people absolutely hate each other. And Watkins Glen, there was an all-out fistfight virtually breaking out in pit lane between Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart, with Tony Stewart saying, hey, you got him away, I hit you, you know, live with it. And Jeff Gordon saying, well, if you're going to drive like that, don't let me have to make any 50-50 decisions between you and me in the upcoming races. And that one was just like, it just was played out. Out in front, you had Gordon and Stewart, and all you could hear in the effects mics on the ABC or ESPN coverage was the cheers.
Yes, that's right. What this really is it's fantastic for NASCAR, because we're so used to it being somewhat sanitized and they're all so polite. And it's interesting that it really, half of it's coming from Jeff Gordon. He's very carefully managed his career and public personality. And we saw last year, just before the Brickyard 400, he got into a shouting match with Dale Jarrett, where Dale Jarrett actually came back the next weekend and apologized to all the viewers for the rough language he had used that the TV cameras had caught. So I think Jeff Gordon is probably a bit fiery, or much more fiery than we think normally, and the normal public image.
Another interesting story in Craftsman Truck for the NASCARs is that Mark Petty will be running the 45 car for the rest of that championship season.
Yes, that's right. Again, that fantastic name that has gone through some pretty tough times of late. Yes, it's good to see that the Petty name continuing on.
And as they head off now to two big races at two big tracks, Lowe's Motor Speedway and Talladega.
And are we going to have some coverage from those tracks?
We will do too. We'll be live at Lowe's and also at the Talladega Motor Speedway. So we should be able to give you plenty of coverage there, as we will at the USGP at Indy.
Yes, we are sort of battling our way past some FIA hurdles, but we will have
about 6,000 US of them.
Yes, that's right. So how much is it for two grandstand seats instead?
Yeah, that's the truth. And, I guess that's one thing we're going to be enjoying to look at, and I'm hoping to actually get to Memphis and have a look at some NHRA qualifying at Memphis whilst I'm there to see Graceland.
Yeah,
on my 6 hour stop in Memphis.
I was going to say, I bet you go to Graceland first.
But all in all, this season in the USA has had quite a deal of interest with the championship and in NASCAR and in the CART FedEx series, all being quite tightly contested affairs, unlike what we have seen, not so much in NASCAR, but certainly in CART.
Yes, that's right. It's great to watch a race not knowing who the favourite is or who's likely to come out on top. It's a bit of a contrast to Formula One, where each week it's really between three drivers in Formula One. NASCAR and CART, you can really take your pick from 10 or 15 who are a chance of winning. The normal favourites, they're having mechanical problems and bad luck, and it really is opening up the opportunities for the lesser-known teams and the up-and-coming drivers. It's fantastic to watch.
And also for the Australian connection, Barry Green, having two good runs in a row.
Yes, that's a team that's really battled this year. Of course, Dario Franchitti started the year with a big chunt in practice, And it took him a little while to get back up to speed, but you really have to say that Dario has been driving like a rookie this year, making some fairly careless judgments and running into people at some pretty silly times. So it really is time that he comes good.
And he's got the record, the most dangerous teammate in the world of motorsport ever to run with.
That's right, Paul Tracy.
Like, can you believe, with all those cars breaking down in a kart race, and Tracy nurses it to victory?
Yes, that's right.
What's the date? Is it October 31 or what?
Yeah, he pulls off the Larry Perkins style from the back of the field and cleans up the race. That was fantastic. And Paul Tracy, he had that very bad reputation to start with, where he was in all the accidents. Seems to be the guiding hand of a good woman that has settled him down, plus a new race manager. And it really has been a changed Paul Tracy.
Mm.
And I think we can expect more from him. He really does have the talent. The interesting story now is, will he stay with Team Cool Green for next year? He has a one-year option hanging over him, and we'll see there.
All right. The next race for the FedEx Champ Car Series is at Vancouver, another of the Canadian stopovers, and guaranteed to have a huge crowd.
Yes, the Canadians love the kart racing, particularly when Paul Tracy's winning. And, of course, there's other Canadians in the field, Patrick Carpentier and Alex Tagliani. So the Canadians come out in force. And Vancouver is a funny little track. It's a street circuit, and it's probably more street-like than many of the others. Some areas really haven't been to the drivers pleasing. Very tight, very narrow. The pit area really is squeezed in an area where it just doesn't fit. And they've been under pressure over the last couple of years to make some improvements to the track to make it more like a racetrack than a billy kart.
But it's so funny now to hear Michael and Mario talking. And Mario was, you would have thought he was the kart CEO at the time, the way he was going off at the IRL. And I must say, for IRL fans, Scott Goodyear, a surprise pole sitter with Elio Salazar on the outside of the front row at Kentucky this weekend. But you would have thought he was the CEO of kart, because he was certainly the one that came out and was the most outspoken. Now Michael wants a IRL option.
Yes, quite ironical that, isn't it? Mario's always been the ambassador for the sport and always put in a good word for kart. And wouldn't it be a tragedy for kart if Michael Andretti moves to IRL, and Jimmy Vassar, of course, is a free agent? What if he ends up in IRL? They're the only two Americans in the great American kart series. That will further damage their marketability within the USA if they don't have enough American drivers.
Bobby Rahal taking over the reins, though, of the kart FedEx Champ Car Series has certainly helped. There does seem to be a lot more focus on the US side of things. Of course, the US won't even come close to the Nations Cup this year, because all the people that are American aren't doing anything.
That's right. Andretti and Vassar are struggling this year. Andretti's not doing too bad. He's a contender for the championship, but he really isn't dominating. But there's no other Americans there to back him up in that point score. And Bobby Rahal, yes, he's very successful in his own businesses, so we'll see how that can be applied towards the kart company. It's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. It has financial obligations it must meet, and it'll be interesting if he can turn that around, because it really is the battle between building the great US series, and they've got the plans of going international with races Europe, a new race in Mexico, further diluting the American focus.
Mm. And also, we do have to look at the television battle over there, because ABC and ESPN are going to only have oval track racing. They'll have the IRL and the FedEx Champ Car Series, where Fox and NBC will have all the NASCAR races next year, which has just been, there's probably three people watching NASCAR races to one car.
That's right. NASCAR really is the success story over there. And Fox have latched onto it. They've paid a hefty price to get the rights for it. And a lot of the diehard NASCAR fans are a little bit worried and cynical what Fox are going to do.
Yeah, what's this Australian going to do to NASCAR?
Exactly. Ice hockey fans would know that Fox is infamous for what they did to ice hockey. Ice hockey being such a fast-moving game, and sometimes it's hard to see where the puck has gone, even on TV. The good old boys at Fox, they had a coloured trail following the puck
so that you could see where it's going so quickly. And didn't that upset the purists, the true ice hockey fans? So let's see what they do to NASCAR. When are we going to have little coloured trails following the cars for some of the passing moves or some of the big wrecks, a little like on the cricket where they get on and chalk in, look at this guy. Be interesting what special effects that Fox can come and ruin a sport with.
Of course, Fox did it with the National Football League as well.
Yes, that's right. There's often a lot of criticism about Fox and some of the innovations that they try to cover a sport. Super Bowl last weekend was one of the examples there that people were awful worried. And in the end, it seemed as though Fox did a fair job.
Yeah. Well, finally, we've been able to get a hold of Karen Sherrod at the BTCC. And, Karen, daylight saving here in Australia has really thrown our calendars out of whack.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, it's a bank holiday here, so we're a bit confused as well. But we've actually got qualifying today, so we'll be seeing who's going to be setting the pace.
Yes, and, Honda's Gabriella Tarquini coming back for this race as well should be an interesting one.
Absolutely. Well, he was setting the pace yesterday in testing, so that was very interesting because he's got the weight penalties because he won at Donington. That was 4 weeks ago now. It seems like a sort of very distant memory. So it's going to be a very interesting race, I think, tomorrow.
It has been an interesting championship, and every week we get more and more information about what's happening in 2001, which is certainly building on interest now.
Absolutely. We really are getting there now. I mean, we're getting to the point in the season where we really do need to know because everyone needs to make preparations. Certainly looks like Vauxhall are going to be here next year, and it looks very likely that there's going to be a lot of Peugeots as well, but we just hope that some more manufacturers actually wake up to this series and actually join in because I think it's going to be really good.
Mm. We're going to enjoy both the Vauxhall drivers later in the year when they come over for the 1,000-kilometre race at Bathurst.
I think they're going to have a wonderful time. I mean, they just love being out in these cars. They're such fiery pair, and I think they're going to have a brilliant time, and hopefully they'll have a good result.
All right, now with qualifying today, have we seen anything else but for the Hondas in the practice times yesterday?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Is there any other stories coming out other than the Hondas practice times yesterday?
Well, I mean, James Thompson is back here after that awful crash that he had, and he's really on a high because he had a good result at Donington. And I think the title's out of his reach now, but he's certainly going to cause trouble among the big boys at the front and certainly going to steal a few points off them, I think. So that's going to be pretty interesting, I would think. Anthony Reid is now leading the championship, so he's going to be hoping to extend that lead, and he'll be really hoping to win the championship this year. It'd be great if he could.
For the Ford fans, it has been an up and down year. One week they're hot, the next week they're not.
They have. I mean, one thing you can say for Anthony Reid is he's been pretty consistent. He's been on the podium at every meeting apart from Snetterton, which isn't bad at all. And that also means he's had a weight penalty in almost every race that he's raced in, and yet he's had this steady success. I mean, that's pretty good going.
And even at this early time, what has been the talk amongst all the crowd and everyone getting out for the bank holiday race?
Well, I mean, it's a great event anyway because so many people are on holiday. And, I mean, it's just because we're getting now to the end of the championship, it really is the question of who's going to win. Even though the Fords have been pretty dominant, they haven't got it in the bag. There's the two Vauxhalls of Yvonne Muller and Jason Plato who are chasing really hard. They were setting very good times in testing yesterday, and I think they will certainly be in with a good chance of maybe winning some races here or at least scoring some good points and maybe closing that gap on the Fords. So it's getting very tense now. As we've only got six races left until the end of the season.
And of course two of them being tomorrow, so actually three race meetings left in total.
Absolutely, yes. So I mean we really are getting there, and of course we've got the night race at Snetterton, at Silverstone for the last round, which is the kind of big climax of the whole season, and I think people are really looking forward to that. That's going to be an interesting one because although we've had the night races at Snetterton earlier in the year, by the time we get to Silverstone it'll be September. The nights will be drawing in an awful lot more, so most of those races are actually going to be properly in the dark, and that'll be very interesting indeed.
How do the open wheelers like the Formula Fords and Formula Vauxhall go when there will be such a heavily emphasis on the night?
Well, I mean, I think the way it was at Snetterden, and certainly the way it would be at Silverstone, is they let them go out first, obviously, because they've got no lights. Unless they strap a torch to the front or something like that, I think they'll be stuck, but they'll let them go out first. In fact, talking about these very people, I have James Courtney just sitting here right next to me, and I will pass you over to him now, because he would love to talk to you.
All right, we appreciate that once again, Karen, as James Courtney joins us on the line. And James, every time we talk to you, we talk about great results.
Good morning, and yes, it's not going too bad. The season's going really, really well. Just having a nice, steady results, always finishing on the podium, which is good.
Mm.
We're looking to continue this weekend.
How have you had many opportunities to run at the Brands Hatch Circuit?
Yeah, we raced here quite a few times last year and did heaps and heaps of testing here at the start of the year. So, and testing on, what was it, Thursday went really, really well for us. So it's good we had a two tenths clear of the field, so it's quite good on such a small circuit.
Was this on the Grand Prix, or this was the Indy track, I take it?
No, it's Indy circuit.
Yeah. So slightly shorter. Does that make much of a difference when you're driving?
Yeah, it makes qualifying really, really hard, because the lap time is 48-second lap time, so everyone's really, really close, and to have a two-tenth gap is actually really quite good.
How has everything been going for future plans? Of course, as you get towards the end of the season, hopefully everyone there has been able to have a good look at you this year and probably making some hard decisions for season 2001.
Yeah, it's been going quite good there. A lot of people have been coming and talking to me, some really good teams in Formula 3, but you need quite a big budget, and a lot of Australian people aren't all that interested in helping me. But there's a few English companies that are looking to help me, which is a little bit weird, because I'd rather come from Australia, but not much is happening there, so you have to take what you can get.
Hey, it's only 5 weeks, and then everyone will have plenty of money, because there'll be no Olympics in Sydney.
Yeah, hopefully once the Olympics is over, then everyone has a bit more money to play with, I suppose.
Now, the other thing for yourself is, you're looking at, of course, staying in the open wheelers as long as possible, and what has been your reaction with Jenson Button's qualifying going through all the open wheel pits there?
Really good. Just showing that the young guys can do it, and so it gives us all a bit more confidence knowing that he can get it, we can. So, good. Everyone's really happy.
And, of course, he was, picked out of the Formula 3 only 1 year after he was running in the Formula 4s.
Yeah, so he's had done being there at the right time, right place, the right time, sort of thing. But he's done a fantastic job this year, and it's very impressive.
Mm. I don't know if you've been getting much news, but a fellow you have probably heard of, Christian Murchison, doing some testing in Formula 3000 over there in Hungary a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard there's a bit in the magazine. Couldn't really work out how he got it, but good going that he did get it. I'm not too sure on how he went, but it's good if he gets a drive. It's really, really tough, and I think it'll knock him around a bit in the first couple of races trying to get used to it if he does get the drive.
Mm. The one thing about racing over there is, and probably you've raced over there for so long now in the karts and in Formula Ford, you've realised that the Europeans run a much more contact sport than we do here in Australia.
Yeah, in Australia the officials get a little excited if you just nudge a guy in front of you, and here if you ram them off the track then they might have a look, see what's going on, but everyone pushes a lot harder. In Australia I think it's a lot more of a, let's say, like a sort of family sort of thing. The guys aren't really in it for a business sort of thing is what they are here. Everyone here is in it because they want to make it, like, their life out of it, so they're pushing it hard, giving it everything they got.
Of course, the one person, and I'll have Peter Norton in the studio with me, but the one person that does try to do that is Larry Perkins, and you might not know this, but he's been fined and charged once again for driving hard.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I actually know Larry quite well. He's been one person that has helped me. I did, he gave me a bit of money and then didn't expect anything from it and said, there you go, to help me out a bit, and which was really, really good of him. And the guy that he had the trouble with, Neil Crompton, he tends to help me out a bit over here, so I don't know who to go for there.
And of course, but Larry is one of these people that you would look to because he has been there and tried to do that, along with his teammate Russell Ingalls. They both spend a lot of time, as you have in Europe.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that Larry did actually make it to Formula One and did a really good job over here, which is fantastic, and I think he's the best person around. Now Panorama, when it's raining, I don't think anyone can touch him. He's magic around there. That's why I said he's actually really, really good. And Russell also won the British Formula 4 Championship here and did an excellent job over here as well.
Have the Australians seemed to forgot what you're doing, or have you noticed that the press, you've been away for, what, two years in karts and 2 years in Formula 4 now, so that's 4 years. Have you noticed that they've sort of gone quiet on you?
Yeah, it is quiet, but then I think once the championship's won, I think it might pick up a bit again, but Mark's promising that he's going to be in F1 next year and all this sort of stuff, so we're all sort of looking at him at the moment, but he has to watch out at the moment that he doesn't crash and burn with all the publicity that he's getting, and if he doesn't get anywhere, then it's might burn out, so it's probably better the way I am. I'm sort of hiding in the background, hopefully I'll come through and do it.
Of course, Scott Dixon's getting a test with PacWest, and Jason Bright has got a run later in the year in the Gold Coast.
Yeah, it's really good for those guys. I think they've done an excellent job in America. It's a new thing for an Australian, for the Australians to go there. They've gone to show that they can do it. I think it's really good for them if they get the drive. It's excellent.
And, of course, the Brands Hatch Circuit is one that you sound like you're fairly comfortable with, and the times in qualifying were certainly very reassuring.
Yeah, the time wasn't only quick, we could do them lap after lap, which was really, really good, and I think I did 6 laps on the same tenth. The team was really, really happy, and the other guys were sort of struggling. They did 1 or 2 quick laps, and the other ones were like 2, 3 tenths slower, so fantastic.
All right.
Looking really, really good, not only for qualifying, but also for a race setup.
Well, a fellow that you probably race karts with over here in Australia, Luke Yulden, won the Australian Formula Ford Championship today, so I thought I'd let you know of that.
Uh-huh. Is any of the guys from Australia coming to the festival?
Well, no one's actually played their hand, although Alex Davison is running over in Germany, and there is some talk that he might be there, but sort of Marcus Ambrose is pushing fairly heavily for his Formula 3 run.
Yeah, I went and saw Marcus last weekend at Silverstone, and yeah, a bit of bad luck. He qualified 12th and finished 8th, and he was testing at Silverstone last week, and he's 15th, and struggling a little bit with the setup, but I'm sure they'll sort it out.
Is he getting decent sort of gear from Alan Docking?
Yeah, sure. Alan's a top team. He's Mark, I think, won a few races with him and was right up there in the championship, so the team hasn't changed since then. It's a really good team, I think. Just a little bit underfunded.
And of course, for yourself, are you going to stay with Formula Ford if you can wrap up the championship next year, or do you feel you have to move on to 3?
I'll be doing Formula Ford next year. And I'll be stuck here, I think. I'm going to try and move on. So I'm looking to do Formula 3, if we can get the money.
Now, has Alan Gow come back from holidays and started to help you?
Yeah, he's come back and he's actually quite interested at the moment, which is a really good thing, because when he's interested in something, he wants it done and sort of finished in a couple of weeks, so he's pushing hard at the moment, which is good, and hopefully we'll have something sorted out and I can tell you guys about it in maybe the next race or the last race.
Well, we look forward to catching up with you then. Thanks very much, James Courtney.
Alright, thanks.
And of course, James Courtney running on the Monday, so stay tuned to Inside Motorsport for his final results. And thank you once again to Karen Sherrod for the results, or for the preview there of Brands Hatch. Of course, racing on Bank Holiday Monday should be an interesting clash. And it sounds like Karen's already left us there. But, well, James Courtney has been the very quiet achiever of Australian motorsport.
That's right. He sort of came from nowhere in terms of media publicity when all of a sudden he was world champion in kart racing those few years back. And it really is quite an amazing achievement that these things sort of sneak up on you and bingo, we've got a real star over there in the making.
Yeah, certainly is doing well, as we heard, on the threshold of picking up the Formula Ford Championship there in Britain. But unfortunately, we've come to the end of another show, although my tip, of course, for the Kentucky race is anyone driving a Foyt car.
Yeah, well, you are that sort of leading that sort of direction, don't you? I'll probably go for the Canadian connection, and since he's starting from pole, I'll go for Scott Goodyear.
Yeah, it's an interesting race that will be had on a very, very new circuit, and one that, well, we've talked in the past weeks about the tracks changing their sanctioning, and of course, in the IRL, we saw New Hampshire go from kart to IRL, and now I think they're trying to get a kart race back.
Yes, that's right. In the early days of the IRL, some of these tracks got burned pretty badly. They had to play their hand one way or the other, and they aligned themselves with IRL, and the crowds didn't come. So it really is a very major decision for the management of a particular track, which team they're going to, or which organisation they're going to align themselves with.
And at the moment, you still wouldn't want to have to make that decision until you see where some of these kart signings do go.
That's right. If Michael Andretti goes to IRL, that will be the real kingpin that they needed. They should have had it a couple of years ago. Things could be quite different.
Mm. Well, thanks once again for joining us on Inside Motorsport. I hope you can join us next time round.
Inside Motorsport will return next week on Triple S FM. Don't forget to tune in Monday, 7 a.m. for Duncan Payne's Thunder. Inside Motorsport. Who did you miss?